ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we are reading from Canto 11, Chapter 21, entitled Explanation of the Vedic Path, Text Number 2. Sve Sve Adhikare Ya Nishta Sa Gunaha Parikirtitaha Viparyayas Tu Doshaha Syat Ubayor Esha Nishchaya Sve Sve Adhikare Ya Nishta Sa Guna Parikirtita Viparyayastu Dosha Syat Ubayor Esha Nishchaya Sve Sve Adhikare Ya Nishta Sa Guna Parikirtita Viparyayastu Dosha Syat Ubayor Esha Nishchaya Sve Sve Adhikare Ya Nishta Saguna Parikirtitah Viparyayastu Dosha Syad Ubayor Esha Nishchaya Sve Sve Adhikare Ya Nishta Pariyayastu dosha syad Sve Sve Adhikare Ya Nishta Saguna Parikirtita Viparyayastu Dosha Syat Ubayor Esha Nishchaya Vaishnavis Sve Sve Adhikare Ya Nishta Saguna Parikirtita Viparyayastu dosha syad Ubayor Esha Nishchaya Sve Sve Each in his own Adhikare Position Ya Such Nishtha Steadiness Saha This Gunaha Piety Parikirtita It's declared to be Viparyaha, the opposite. Two, indeed. Doshaha, impiety. Syat, is. Ubayo, of the two. Eshaha, this. Nishchaya, the definite conclusion. Translation by the servants of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Steadiness in one's own position is declared to be actual piety. Whereas deviation from one's position is considered impiety. In this way the two are definitely ascertained. Purport. In the previous verse, Lord Krishna explained that the path of spiritual progress begins with working without furtive desires, advances to the stage of realized spiritual knowledge, and culminates in direct engagement in the devotional service of the Lord. Here the Lord emphasizes that a conditioned soul should not artificially disturb the natural evolution of his Krishna consciousness by deviating from those duties prescribed by the Lord Himself. In the lower stages of human life, one is entangled in false identification with the gross material body and desires to execute fruitive activities based on society, friendship and love. When such materialistic activities are offered in sacrifice to the Supreme Lord, one becomes situated in karma yoga. By regulated sacrifice, one gradually gives up the gross bodily concept of life and advances to the stage of realization of spiritual knowledge, whereby one understands oneself to be an eternal spirit soul, completely different from the material body and mind. Feeling relief from the pangs of materialism, one becomes very attached to one's spiritual knowledge, and thus one is situated in the stage of jnana yoga. As the candidate further advances on the spiritual path, he understands himself to be part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. He then sees that his conditional life as well as his spiritual knowledge was obtained from the personality of Godhead, who awards the results of all types of activities, both pious and sinful. By directly engaging in the loving service of the Supreme Lord and understanding oneself to be the Lord's eternal servant, one's attachment evolves into pure love of Godhead. Thus one first gives up the lower stage of attachment to the material body and then subsequently gives up attachment to cultivation of spiritual knowledge. This relieves one of material life. Finally, one recognizes the Lord Himself as the resting place of one's eternal love and fully surrenders to God in full Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna explains in this verse that one who is still attached to the material body and mind cannot artificially give up the prescribed duties of karma yoga. In the same way, one who is a spiritual neophyte, just beginning to realize the illusion of material life, should not artificially try to think of the Lord's intimate pastimes 24 hours a day, imitating the stage of prema bhakti. Rather, he should cultivate analytic knowledge of the material world, by which one gives up attachment to the material body and mind. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we find many analytic descriptions of the material world, and they can free the conditioned soul from false identification with matter. One who has achieved the perfect stage of love of Godhead, however, being freed from all gross and subtle attachments to the material world, may give up the lower stages of karma, yoga and jnana yoga, and engage directly in the Lord's loving service. In chapter 19, verse 45, Lord Krishna states, Guna dosha dvishir dosho gunas tubhaya varjataha. One should not see material good and evil within a devotee of the Lord. Indeed, one becomes pious by giving up such mundane conceptions. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that occasionally a neophyte devotee may be polluted by association with those enthusiastically executing fruitive activities and mental speculation. Such a devotee's religious activities may be affected by mundane tendencies. Similarly, an ordinary person who observes the exalted status of a pure devotee sometimes externally imitates the devotee's activities, considering himself to be on the same exalted platform of pure devotional service. These imperfect practitioners of bhakti yoga are not exempt from criticism, since their fruitive activities, mental speculation and false prestige are material intrusions in the pure loving service of the Lord. A pure devotee engaged exclusively in the Lord's service should not be criticized, but a devotee whose devotional service is mixed with material qualities may be corrected so that he can rise to the platform of pure devotional service. Innocent persons should not be misled by the mixed devotional service of those not engaged exclusively in the bhakti yoga system. But those unable to fully engage in Krishna consciousness should nevertheless not give up their regular prescribed duties, declaring them to be illusion. For example, one unable to fully engage in pure Krishna consciousness should not give up his family life, considering it an illusion. For by doing so, he will fall into illicit sex life. Material piety and analytic knowledge of the material world must therefore be cultivated until one comes to the stage of directly practicing Krishna consciousness. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chakshunmudamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So today is also the auspicious experience day of Jayananda Prabhu. It's a very intimate disciple of Srila Prabhupada. So I was just very recently, I was asked to speak about him also. So I'll speak on the verse, then towards the end, I've got some printouts which I'll read out from. So in this verse, so Krishna is giving his opinion about piety and impiety. So Krishna is saying steadiness in one's own position is declared to be actual piety, whereas deviation from one's position is considered impiety. So, of course, this is in response to Uddhava's question. In chapter 19 of this canto, in text 45 to 47, Krishna mentioned that Uddhava should look beyond good and bad qualities in a devotee. And he mentioned that looking at good and bad qualities in a person is itself a bad quality. So one should transcend that. And then Uddhava heard that and he said, hang on a second. And he fired 6 questions at Krishna in the next chapter. So, 5 questions and he made 1 statement. So the first question he asked was, if that's the case, then why do the Vedas focus on positive and negative injunctions? We see the Vedic literatures are full of, you know, do's and don'ts. Do this, don't do that. And he said that the Vedas themselves talk about heaven and hell. You know, especially if you read the fifth canto very graphically describes how hell is like and how heaven is. So, and then, which is basically based on piety and impiety, pious actions and impious actions. So he's asking these very intelligent questions and he's saying, how are we supposed to understand the instructions of the Vedas, which order one to act piously and forbid sinful activity or regulate activities? If that's the case, then how do we understand the Vedic literatures? Because they're full of, you know, pious actions, don't do this. And he's saying, if people reject the Vedas, then on these grounds, then how are they supposed to attain perfection in life? And also, the Vedic literatures are so vast that they have the spiritual aspect of life, but they also have the material aspect. So you see, there is Niti Shastra, there is Jyotish Shastra, there is military arts. So these are dealing with the material aspect of life, how to live in this world basically. And then there's the Upanishads and the transcendental literature, which talk about Krishna and the spirit soul. So then, if the Vedas are rejected on these grounds, then, you know, how will people get material and spiritual guidance? And then furthermore, to sum it up, he says, you know, on one hand, the Vedas are rejecting, are recommending piety and impiety, and on the other hand, the same Vedas are rejecting that. So this seems to be a contradiction, and this will lead to a lot of chaos and confusion. Because some people might think, okay, you know, because as it is mentioned here, steadiness in one's own position is declared to be piety. So somebody who is executing the Karmakanda rituals, he might think, okay, you know, I should reject this. And so this will lead to a lot of confusion. So these are Uddhava's brilliant questions. Of course, Uddhava is a pure devotee of the Lord. He knows the answers to all these questions. So then, you know, one might wonder, why is he asking? He's actually asking for our benefit, for the benefit of the general people. And this theme we see throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam also. Maharaj Parikshit, he's asking many questions which he already knows the answer to. And it is for our benefit. Because Parikshit Maharaj, he's on the liberated platform. And we also see, like, sometimes, to take it in the modern day context, we have Mahatma Prabhu. Mahatma Prabhu asks so many questions. And usually he knows the answer to those questions. Like one very common question is, can you define Krishna consciousness? So Prabhuji has asked that question many times, but he's asking for our benefit. So in this way we can see that how sometimes devotees ask for the benefit of others. So what we see, piety and impiety is actually is a very relative. Because what piety and impiety is for one person, it might not be true for the other person. It's a relative term. It actually depends on one's level of spiritual advancement. But we should understand what is the purpose of piety and impiety. And the purpose mainly is to restrict the living entities from unregulated sense enjoyment, as Kesha Prabhu was mentioning yesterday in his Bhagavatam class. That when we come to this material world, we have a very strong desire to enjoy independently from Krishna. And Krishna knows that. Krishna knows our mentality, our attitude, why we are coming to this material world. And Krishna is very, very expert preacher, you can say. That he's like a father, you know, sometimes the child will ask, you know, I want this, I want this, I want this. And then the father might give it to him, even against his own will. So it's like that. So the living entity wants to enjoy separately from Krishna very strongly, has this very strong desire. So it comes to the material world, and in order so that the living entity doesn't degrade any further, Krishna gives this Vedic system. Because the Vedic path is very, very wide. There is the Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Upasana Kanda. The Vedic literatures are very, 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 very vast, and most of them they deal with fruitive activities. Most of the Vedas deal with the Karma Kanda section. So we see Krishna is actually very, very sensitive to our mentality, to a rebellious nature. He knows how to bring us back. He's very expert. So the Karma Kanda and is basically to regulate the living entity. I remember like when going back 3 years, I would ask when I would see my father taking intoxication with his friends, I also wanted to do that. So I would go to him. I said, "Can you please give me? I also want to drink." And I would protest. So then he would give me, "Okay, you take 2 sips and that's it." He knows, because if he doesn't give me, I will go outside and I will get it anyway. I will go out with my friends and get intoxicated. So he'd say, "Okay, you take 2 sips and after that, when you get your own job, when you start earning yourself, then you can drink as much as you like. But for now, just 2 sips." So like that. That's an example of something like regulation. So to regulate our activities. So we see the Vedas actually regulate the activities of living entities. The whole purpose is to regulate them so that they don't degrade any further. That's why we see meat eating, intoxication, everything is regulated. That's why there's the institution of marriage. So in the Vedas there are, for those who are addicted to meat, those who say I cannot live without my meat, for them there are sacrifices in which they can offer meat to Goddess Kali. But again, that is very, very restricted. It has to be done at a certain time and certain place and once in a month and they have to kill the animal themselves looking in the eye of the goat. And not any animal, has to be a certain animal. So like a goat. And then they have to chant the mantra, you know, today I'm killing you, maybe next life we'll switch positions. So the whole idea is that after some time, one who's engaging in such activities, they'll realize what am I doing, and I should actually progress further than that. So generally in Karma Kanda, they take with the worship of demigod. Hare Krishna. Mahatma Prabhu is here. So we see in the Karma Kanda section, there's the worship of demigods. It's strongly recommended because the people worship the demigods so that they can achieve their, in Karma Kanda the whole goal is to achieve sense gratification in a regulated way. So it might be either in this life on this planet or they might want to go to heaven. So the perfection of Karma Kanda is to go to heavenly planets. And the topmost heavenly planet is Brahma Loka, as we know. You can't go any higher than that. And where one can live till the end of the creation. So one can have a very, very long life. And so the Vedas recommend different kinds of worship according to the mentality of different kinds of people. So like the second canto of Bhagavatam, for those who want good health, they are recommended to worship a certain demigod. Those who want good husband or wife, you worship this demigod. or you worship the sun god for this purpose. So different demigods are worshipped for different purposes. Like, you can go on the internet, there are some websites where you can tell them what problems you have, and then they'll make an itinerary for you, a travel itinerary, where they'll tell you to go in different temples in India, demigod temples, so that you can achieve your different desires. So another example is of King Nriga. King Nriga was executing the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. So he was executing the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, and he was the son of King Ikshvaku. And so the relatives of Krishna once, I think they were hunting, or so they came across a well and they wanted to drink water. And in the well they saw this huge lizard, and they were surprised. And they tried to take, out of compassion, they tried to take the lizard out, but they failed. So they went and told this to Krishna, the incident to Krishna. So Krishna personally came and he put his hand down and he touched the lizard, and the lizard turned into a demigod. And then everyone was surprised. Krishna knew, of course, the history of the lizard, but so others can know, so he asked, "Can you tell me about you? Who are you?" And then he said, "I'm actually King Nriga, the son of King Ikshvaku." And how he described how he ended up in that position as a lizard. Because King Nriga was very, very charitable by nature. And so he would give a lot of cows in charity. It is mentioned that he gave, you know, as much grains are there, as much grains of dust are there on this planet, that many number of cows he donated in charity. So you can imagine how many cows he had. If he donated that much in charity, he would be having more also. So, and not only he donated cows, but he donated the cows to qualified people, to qualified brahmanas, not to any person, you know, on the street. So, and he donated, apart from cows, so many other items also. So once what happened was he used to donate his cows to brahmanas. So he donated a certain number of cows to one particular brahmana, and one cow came out of that herd and came back into the original herd, and then that herd was donated to another brahmana. So then that first brahmana came back and said, you know, because it is actually a sin if somebody gives in charity to a brahmana and then you take the same item back from the brahmana and give it to someone else, or you even claim it back. So that is considered to be a very sinful activity. So so then the two brahmanas were fighting over that single cow, and they came to the king, and the king said, "Please forgive me for that, and I will give you 100,000 cows in charity. You give that one cow back." But they did not accept his proposal, and for that, when he died, he went to Yamraj. And so Yamraj said, "Okay, first, either you can enjoy or you can suffer first. What do you want?" He said, "Okay, I'll suffer first." So he was turned into a lizard for this slight discrepancy. So we can see in Karmakanda how if it is not executed properly, according to the proper rules, one can actually get a negative reaction. And he ended up as a lizard in the well for a very long period of time, till Krishna came. Of course, his piety attracted Krishna. So we see there are varieties of scripture in this world, and all of them basically deal with Karmakanda. So you take the major religions of the world, and including the Vedas, they deal with fruitive activities, ritualistic activities. So they deal with dharma, artha, kama and moksha. Well, dharma, artha, kama and moksha also a little bit. So because people want to enjoy through religion. So the whole idea is again to regulate the sense gratification of the living entity, so that he accepts a higher authority, and in that way it is regulated, and they gradually make some advancement. That's the whole idea behind that. And we see also Vyasadev, he, because of his advanced spiritual position, he could foresee the anomalies of the age of Kali. And so he divided the one Veda into four, because he could foresee that people in this age will be very unintelligent. He could see the deterioration of everything material, the body, the duration of life would be short, memory will be short, you know, cows would not give so much milk, the land will not produce enough food. So he contemplated on the situation and he divided the one Veda. Originally it was the Yajur Veda, so he divided it into four: Rig, Atharva, Yajur, Sama Vedas. So for the gradual upliftment of the living entity, because they are attached to fruitive activities. And he also compiled the Ramayana, Mahabharata and the Puranas for people, because to study the Vedas one needs to be on the Brahminical platform. Unless one is a Brahmana, one cannot study the Vedas. So some people say that is the monopoly of the Brahmanas, only the Brahmanas can study. So in other words, one who takes birth in the Brahmana family can only study. And then the other extreme is, other people say, you know, how come only, you know, they can study, why not everyone? It should be for everyone. But actually both are unintelligent. So therefore he compiled the Mahabharata, Ramayana, and the purpose of that, the Mahabharata serves the same purpose of the Vedas. Because in the Mahabharata we find the Bhagavad Gita. So Srila Prabhupada says that's a transcendental collaboration between Vyasadeva and Krishna. It's an interesting statement Prabhupada makes in one of the purports. So we see this transition from Karma Kanda to Karma Yoga. So the result of performing Karma Kanda properly is that one gets purified, and then gradually one thinks, by associating with, you know, bona fide Brahmanas, that I should actually offer the fruits of my activities to Krishna. I should not be attached to the fruits of my activities. And that further on leads to purification, where one cultivates knowledge that he is the spirit soul. He realizes that he is a spirit soul and he has nothing to do with matter. And that material life is miserable. And then when he progresses further, he comes to the stage of Bhakti Yoga, where he realizes, I'm actually part and parcel of Krishna and I'm meant to serve Krishna. My constitutional position is to be a servant of Krishna. And so that's the transition from Karma Kanda to Karma Yoga to Jnana Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. And so here it's mentioned, steadiness in one's own position is declared to be piety. So it's interesting, Krishna mentions one's own position. So one cannot artificially take to another's position, or one cannot renounce one's activities. So there are two kinds of duties. One is our material prescribed duties, and then there's the spiritual prescribed duties. So the spiritual duties are prescribed by the spiritual master. And then there's the material duties, which can also be prescribed by the spiritual master. So the material prescribed duties are according to one's psychophysical conditional nature. In other words, according to one's conditioned nature. Because we all are conditioned by the three modes of nature. So we have, according to the modes we have come in contact with, we have a certain kind of nature. That's why we find in every society there's the four classes. There's the Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishyas, Shudra, the Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. Then the four orders. So this is according to one's psychophysical conditional nature. Of course, in this day and age, people are trying to establish a classless society. But that's not possible. No matter how hard they try, or they declare it to be a classless society, it's not possible. Still we find there's the intellectuals, there's the administrators, there's the Vaishyas, and there's the Shudras. This is there everywhere. So no particular caste is actually abominable. No particular occupational duty is abominable, as long it's engaged in the service of Krishna. You know, one's nature might be a Shudra, a Kshatriya, Vaishya, a Brahmana. If we are serving Krishna, then nothing is abominable. Everything is on the same level. So this, and even Krishna stresses this point twice in the Bhagavad Gita, in 335 and 1847. And he says, it is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. And then in the third chapter he says, it is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties, even though faultily, than another's duties perfectly. Destruction in the course of performing one's own duty is better than engaging in another's duties, for to follow another's path is dangerous. So we see Krishna emphasizes this point twice in the Bhagavad Gita, that one should actually act according to one's nature. And also Krishna mentions about sannyas and tyag in the 18th chapter. So he describes renunciation in the three modes. So in the mode of passion, some people renounce their prescribed duties because it might be troublesome or it results in bodily discomfort. Or in the mode of ignorance, they might renounce due to illusion, like it's mentioned here, that somebody might want to renounce their married life and join the ashram because they're finding it too troublesome. So, or one might want to take to the ashram because, you know, I don't want to get a job, it's too much, you know, it's just too much headache, it's all maya, so I should join the ashram. So that is not going according to the nature. So the nature of a kshatriya is to be violent. So like Arjuna was saying, I do not want in the first chapter he's saying, I do not want to fight this battle, this war. I rather become a beggar and beg by living and live by begging. And so he was trying to change his nature. But Krishna said, no, you fight because you are a kshatriya and you have to, you will act according to your nature. Because the kshatriyas, their nature is to control and to rule and to administrate. And that's why we also see in the Mahabharata, they went and asked Duryodhana for 5 villages. They said, okay, don't give us the entire kingdom, you just give us 5 villages so that we can exercise our kshatriya propensity. But Duryodhana did not even give them any piece of land. But in Krishna consciousness we see that the devotion, in our devotional life we see that for those who are not on the very advanced platform, it is actually a combination of karma and jnana. And you know, not all devotees can perform bhajan all day, you know, like just sit in the ashram and chant all day like Haridas Thakur or read Srimad Bhagavatam all day, because we have senses and our senses require engagement. Only very, very advanced devotees can do that, like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I think for 3 years he went underground and he chanted lakhs of holy names and then he came out and started preaching. But this cannot be imitated because he is on a very advanced level. And Srila Prabhupada knew our psychophysical condition. And Srila Prabhupada very expertly dovetailed our propensity, because we want projects, we want to achieve, we want to do things. So Srila Prabhupada very expertly channeled that into serving Krishna. Okay, if you want to achieve, you go and preach. You start new centers. You do programs and you bring people to Krishna consciousness. In this way, we get purified and gradually we develop a taste for chanting the holy names of Krishna. Because in the beginning, we don't have a taste for chanting Hare Krishna. Even 16 rounds is a struggle in terms of focusing, in terms of attention to the holy names. It's a big struggle. So that's why we have the rest of the day filled with so many different activities so that we can regulate our mind and we can serve Krishna. And also we see devotees should cultivate analytic knowledge. Srila Prabhupada said, I think this was for Brahmacharis, he said that they should have discussions about celibacy. That is kirtan, Srila Prabhupada said. Because in other words, if we do not also cultivate analytic knowledge of this material world, Srila Prabhupada said devotees will grow weak. So that's why we see there is in the Vedas there is the negative side and the positive side. So Srila Prabhupada also, when Srila Prabhupada has given so many lectures, in that he speaks so much about you're not the body, you're the spirit soul. And from different angles of vision he presents that point. And Srila Prabhupada again and again describes the nature of the material world. Because it is very important for us to understand how the material world functions. If we want to conquer over Maya, then we have to understand the workings of Maya. So even in the Bhagavatam we find there's so many sections which describe about the material world, how it functions, even in the Bhagavad Gita. So let's look at piety and impiety in the modern context. Of course, all this is in the Vedic context. The modern civilization is far, far away from the Vedic context, from the Vedic lifestyle. In the present day and age, the standard of civilization is unregulated, unlimited sense gratification. Do what you like. And so people have defined piety and impiety in their own ways. As Krishna mentions, one's faith is cultivated according to the modes of nature we come in contact with. So, and even Arjuna asked this question, that what about those people who follow certain rules and regulations but according to their own faith? They are not in accord with the scriptures. What is their destination? So we see the people who are in the mode of goodness, they'll generally worship demigods or the impersonal Brahman or the Panchopasana, the five kinds of gods, Vishnu, Durga, Brahma, Surya, Indra, like that. And those who are in the mode of passion, they will create some god. So we see in Kali Yuga, in this day and age, the faith in the modes of passion and ignorance is very widespread. In ignorance, it will be like, you know, tantric worship, you know, worshipping ghosts and spirits. You go to the graveyard, somebody is worshipping some ghost, you know. Like Srila Prabhupada mentions, and if somebody finds out that there is a ghost residing in a tree, they will worship that tree. So this is worship in the mode of ignorance. In passion, they will create their own person. Okay, you are God, so I'll worship you. So like in India, there's this politician, her name is Mayawati. So, she's the leader of the Dalits, or the Dalits means, untouchable, yeah, so-called untouchables. So she's the leader, and so they have actually built a temple for her. I think a temple is under construction where they're going to install her deity. So it came in the newspaper that she'd be the first alive goddess who's being worshipped on the planet. So this is a worship in the mode of passion, faith in the mode of passion, that people create their own gods and then they worship. So in India, even Amitabh Bachchan, a very famous movie star, you know, he's worshipped. They offer aarti to him. So this is worship in the mode of passion. So this is very prominent in Kali Yuga. And people's understanding of piety is, you know, do whatever you want to do, and as long as you're not hurting others, I'm a very pious person. You know, I'm not, just do good, you know, I'm a good person, I'm not hurting anyone else, so I just do my own thing. I earn money honestly, you know. They don't care what they're eating or what they're doing, but you know, my karma is good, so I'm a pious person. And impiety is to impede others' sense gratification in this day and age. If you impede somebody's sense gratification, then that person is very impious. So just like the communications minister of Australia, I think he or she, they're actually criticizing Google and Facebook. They're saying both of these companies are breaching privacy laws. They're breaching users' privacy. So he or she is criticizing Google because Google have these cars which go around the world in all the streets, and they take pictures of all the streets, and so they make these online maps, you know, Google Maps are there. So what happened was Google, because even in the temple we have wireless networks, so many networks are open. So they, by mistake, they collected people's private data. So now they're criticizing Google, you know, that you are actually breaching people's privacy. So in this way we can see that whoever impedes other sense gratification, they are considered to be impious. And Facebook also, they are saying that Facebook is compromising with the user's privacy. So in this way, we see they are impeding people's sense gratification. And also we see, so therefore, people are addicted to eating different kinds of food, there's different kinds of charity, there's different kinds of austerity and penances, all according to the modes of nature. So we see piety results in promotion to the heavenly planets, as at max, as I said. So, but as Krishna says, even if you go to Brahmalok, it is a place of misery. Whether you go to the high, from the highest to the lowest, all are places of misery. So, and the result of as good piety or pious activity is a good birth, you know, knowledge, aristocratic family, and so on and so forth. So the impiety is exactly the opposite. So piety is like a debit card. You have a debit card and you have certain amount of money, so you keep spending till it runs out. And once it runs out, that's it. You're back to square one. But according to, from Krishna's point of view, as Krishna mentioned before, both piety and impiety are bad. Both are, from Krishna's point of view, it's not very impressive. You know, so people are very proud. They're very pious people. You know, like some of my relatives, I know they're very proud. You know, we are nice people. We give a lot of charity, and you know, we have raised a family. We haven't divorced. We have children still. So we are a very pious family. And but from Krishna's point of view, it's nothing impressive, because they both are like dry stool and wet stool. Piety and impiety. So piety is like wet stool and impiety is like dry stool. So for a hog likes wet stool because there's a lot of rust in it. It's very juicy. So if you give a hog halwa, a pig halwa, it will not like that. It will like stool. But that's what its nature is. So from, but Krishna says, you reject both of these, sarva dharman paritajya, maam ekam sharanam braja. You reject both piety and impiety, various processes of mundane religion, and you surrender unto me. I will deliver you from all sin. But we can also see sometimes, somebody might be very pious, but their intentions might be bad. Like we see in the various scriptures, there's Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, and there's Ravana. So these were actually very, very learned personalities. They knew the Vedas in and out. And through their, and they were worshipping demigods. They were worshipping Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma. But their motives were very impure. They had very demoniac motives. And they even got benediction from Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma. Like Ravana, he could change his form. He had a 10-headed, very demoniac form. And he changed his form into a very saintly person, and he kidnapped Sita like that. And we see Hiranyakashipu got benediction from Lord Brahma, and he almost became immortal. So, and Kamsa also, he knew a lot of philosophy. You know, he was speaking philosophy, I think, to Devaki when six of our children were killed by him. And he said, all this is by the will of providence. So they actually knew philosophy, but they knew the Vedas in and out, but the intention was not pure. And we see what Ravana did. He actually kidnapped the consort of Ram. You know, he dared to do that. In other words, Sita Devi is an expansion of, sorry, Lakshmi Devi is an expansion of Sita Devi. And Lakshmi is always with Narayan. So he wanted to enjoy Lakshmi independent from Narayan. That was his demoniac mentality. So we can see, we also have that same mentality in us. You know, this Prabhupada said, people want Ram Rajya without Ram. So people want to enjoy God's kingdom without God. So if we want to enjoy Krishna's energies without Krishna, if we take Krishna's energies to be separate from Krishna, we have the Ravan within us. The small Ravana. Of course, the difference is we look much different. We don't look like Ravana. But the mentality is, underlying mentality is the same. And we see even in the modern world, even Hitler, he also consulted the Vedas. His sign was the swastika. You know, swastika even on all his soldier's uniform, there was swastika. And he consulted the Vedas for warfare tactics and all that. So Hitler also used the Vedas, but their intention was something else. So Krishna says actually both piety and impiety are sinful, because through piety and impiety the living entity wants to enjoy sense gratification, because the goal is sense gratification. One is I will consult a higher authority, Vedic authority, and other is I will enjoy independently. But actually both are sinful, because both want to enjoy sense gratification. So the real piety is to engage in devotional service. Engagement in the 9 items of devotional service, that is real piety. And if you don't engage in that, then that is being impious. So piety and impiety is like, you know, honor and honesty among thieves. You know, even among thieves there's code of ethics and there's code of conduct. I was looking on the internet how in the Russian mafia they have their own, there were 20 points of code of conduct among the Russian mafia. So, you know, if you steal it has to be divided, you know, honestly amongst everyone. And, you know, you have to defend the other thief. If you get caught, you know, you don't have to reveal other secrets. And so there's a whole code of conduct and ethics amongst thieves. So piety and impiety is like that. It's just, you know, code of ethics. So, and it's interesting, in the Gita it's mentioned, only pious people can take to devotional service. Yesham Tavanta Gatam Papam. Only pious people attract the mercy of devotees. And we see actually Srila Prabhupada, he created the piety for us. Because most of us, you know, don't have the piety. So Srila Prabhupada has created this piety for us in the form of through prasadam distribution, harinam, book distribution. And then we, by coming in contact with devotees, we developed, you know, this piety, and then we take up to Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop here, and because I was, Sindarup Mataji mentioned that she'd speak on his grace, Jayananda Prabhu. So I'll read a little bit about his life. So these are some, this is an article from the Back to Godhead, and then there's, then various senior devotees of ISKCON, they've wrote something about Jayananda Prabhu. So I'll read that. So this is from Back to Godhead magazine, June 1995. Srila Jayananda Prabhu joined Srila Prabhupada and the fledging Hare Krishna movement in San Francisco in 1967. Jayananda Prabhu had been driving a cab, and encouraged by Srila Prabhupada, he kept that job to help support the storefront Hare Krishna temple. He also gave Srila Prabhupada $5,000 to help print the first edition of Bhagavad Gita as it is. For many years, Jayananda Prabhu was the backbone of the San Francisco Rath Yatra. He would do everything from asking for donations of food, flowers and money for advertising, building the chariots, arranging for permits and organizing the food and distribution of prasadam. The last festival Jayananda was able to work on directly was the New York City Rath Yatra in 1976. Attended by Srila Prabhupada, it was the first Rath Yatra in New York, and it went down Fifth Avenue. Jayananda called it the most successful of all the festivals he had worked on. Soon after that festival, Jayananda Prabhu was diagnosed as having cancer. He spent his last few months advising devotees in Los Angeles who were preparing to put on their first Rath Yatra. He passed away in 1977 while devotees chanted the Hare Krishna mantra in his room. In a letter to Jayananda shortly after his passing, Srila Prabhupada wrote, "As you were hearing Krishna Kirtan, I am sure that you were directly promoted to Krishna Lok. Krishna has done a great favor to you not to continue your diseased body and has given you a suitable place for your service." Srila Prabhupada requested devotees all over the world to commemorate Jayananda Prabhu's passing every year as they would that of any great devotee of Krishna. So that's from Back to Godhead. And also notice Jayapadaka Maharaj, he wrote something about Jayananda Prabhu, so I'll read that out. So Jayapadaka Maharaj says, On the parents of Jayananda Prabhu, I would like to offer my obeisances to Srila Prabhupada and my Vartama Pradaksha Sripa Jayananda Prabhu, who was so instrumental in engaging me in Krishna consciousness. When I first came to the temple in 1968, I saw a sign that said, Festival of the Chariots, Vegetarian Meal 25 Cent Donation. So I was already vegetarian and doing yoga in some country place I had, but I was looking for a guru, all the gurus I found were bogus. So let me find out more about this place. So I went there and had the prasadam, and so many other things happened. After I had bought a set of Srimad Bhagavatams, I heard the sound of boom, 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 like hammering. So I went in behind the temple and there was Jayananda Prabhu with half dozen people and devotees. There were all kinds of people with hair, so many different kinds of people. None of them looked exactly like a shaved up devotee or anything. It seemed that as soon as I had looked, he didn't wait one second. He just looked at me and said, Do you know how to hold a nail? And he gave me a nail and hammered it into the rough and said, You are expert. You are really expert. Are you a qualified carpenter? I said, No, no, no. Then he said, Do you know how to hammer? Can you hammer the nail in where the little mark is? So then I hammered it in and he exclaimed, You are fantastic. You are great. Could you help us? We are building this Rath Yatra cart. He had so much enthusiasm that you couldn't say no to him. Talk about preaching by example. He was just contagious. I could have been the delivery man walking in there. He had an ability to just engage everyone. The whole time you were there, he would be telling you about Krishna. While you were working, he would be telling you different things. He would be glorifying Srila Prabhupada. He was very, very simple-hearted and completely non-envious and loving to Srila Prabhupada. So I was in that association for about a week. Every day I was coming to help build the Rath Yatra cart, reading Srila Prabhupada's books and chanting my japa, and then I decided that I had found the path I was looking for. I didn't accept it blindly as I was quite intellectual, and I thought I'll do it for a few months and see how it goes, but as far as I know, this is it. I was thinking that if I didn't work, I could always change my mind, but I wanted to do it fully and give it a good try. I could always change my mind. So I decided to surrender on that day. And if I had any doubts, I was thinking that I could deal with them later. So I asked Jayananda if he could shave me up. And he did on the day of the Rath Yatra. He gave me my first shave. The devotees were asking who the new shaved up person was. I was in the front of the Rath, pulling it under Jayananda's guidance, steering it or whatever. Fortunately or unfortunately, after this, I went to see Srila Prabhupada and I was directly serving under Srila Prabhupada. This was very fortunate, but unfortunately I didn't get the association of Jayananda. Later though, when Srila Prabhupada called me to LA to send me to India, then Jayananda was in LA and I had some opportunity to do some service with him. He is like Anantadev is to Krishna, supporting everything. He is behind the scenes. Everything would go on nicely because of his presence. He would look what was the service that no one wanted to do, and he would trick people and say, Let's get the nectar. Who wants the nectar? Okay, let's go. Take out the garbage or something like that. This is nectar because when you take out the garbage from the temple, you're cleaning your heart. He really had a lot of practical realization about what devotional service was all about. I remember that I was assigned to assist him in gathering flowers, and in those days we did things in ISKCON in a kind of pioneering type of way. It was thought that, like in India, if you pluck flowers from people's homes, nobody really minds, not much anyway. They know it is for the deities. But he went off to Beverly Hills, where all the movie stars live, picking flowers at 3 o'clock in the morning, or 2 o'clock or midnight for the deities. Then someone thought we were robbers and they started shooting at us. Somehow we escaped, and when we got back, Srila Prabhupada said, Okay, you had better stop this program. This is not good. So I had this personal association on two occasions in my life, and they were very memorable occasions. Srila Prabhupada had us go before the deities of Rukmini Dwarkadish before they went on a procession. And we had to give our weekly report to the deities on what we had done. Many wonderful things were happening there, and one of the wonderful things was Jayananda Prabhu's association and his total dedication to building the Rath Yatra cause. Even during the last period of his life, when he had blood leukemia cancer, still he was completely fixed on doing his service, and never did he waver from his favorable mood of devotional service. So really he is a saint, someone who was sent to help Srila Prabhupada, and he went back to the spiritual world like this. We should remember him and pray that we may also be dedicated to serving Srila Prabhupada favorably and also be able to achieve the perfection of human life. So that was from His Holiness Jayapataka Maharaj. So I'll read one more from Gaurdas Pandit Prabhu. So Srila Prabhupada loved him with all of his heart because of his selfless devotion and great Vaishnava qualities. Jayananda Prabhu is called the first ISKCON saint. I was in Srila Prabhupada's room when he heard that Jayananda Prabhu had left his body. Srila Prabhupada showed his great affection for Jayananda Prabhu and glorified him with tears in his eyes. He prayed to Krishna for him and told us that he went back to Godhead. I think he left the planet just in time to meet Srila Prabhupada in Krishna Loka a short time later. When we hear the stories about Srila Prabhupada and his followers like Jayananda Prabhu, we become inspired. Whatever a great man or woman does, others follow. I had the good fortune to get Jayananda Prabhu's association in 1974. I had come from Seattle to San Francisco Rath Yatra. I came a week or so before the Rath Yatra and I was asked by Jayananda Prabhu if I would help prepare the carts. I was happy to be engaged in that service. He drove us out to the Rath cart site after morning prasadam every day. He would always be singing Hare Krishna or bhajans as he drove. He showed great compassion of all the devotees and people. He was always bringing nice prasadam and treating everyone, even the garbage man, with great respect. This charmed everyone and made them want to offer some service back. I ended up joining the movement after this Rath Yatra, even though I had not planned on it. This may have been due to the inspiration I got from the great Jayananda Prabhu. Although I only had a few days association with Jayananda Prabhu, it was enough to see that he was very Krishna conscious. His body, mind and words were totally engaged in the service of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Many devotees have memories of Jayananda and I hope they share them in the temples, homes and on the internet. I joined with the movement with Vishnu Jan Swami and the Radha Damodar Travelling Sankirtan Party. I hope to see an annual festival to honor Vishnu Jan Swami also. So that's basically about Jayananda Prabhu from Gaurdas Pandit Prabhu. So you can see how Jayananda Prabhu was very, very dear to Srila Prabhupada and a very selfless servant, and how he inspired everyone else also. And Srila Prabhupada, as Jayapataka Maharaj mentioned, that every year we should commemorate his disappearance. So Srila Jayananda Prabhu ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.